Hello, welcome to the latest episode of Data Unchained. Today will be our bio-IT edition of the Data Unchained podcast. And once I introduce today's guest, you'll certainly understand why. But before we do that, let me talk a little bit about what this podcast is all about. So the paradigm for data access has really changed over the last few decades with the advent of the cloud, distributed data centers, edge computing, even bringing data into space. Organizations are increasingly trying to figure out not just how to create and store that data, but how to put it to work in analytics and AI applications. The Data Unchained podcast talks about the problems, the tools, the solutions to help make data a globally accessible resource. Today's guest is Adam Marco. He recently joined Hammerspace as the field CTO for life sciences. Did I get the title right, Adam?
That's correct.
I did. Great. So welcome to the podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about you, your background, kind of who is Adam?
Thanks. Yeah, sure. Well, I've always been interested in biology and life sciences from a very young age. I had an insect collection pretty early, and I've always had different kinds of pets. And I actually
live
started
insects or those ones with like little pins through them?
Both.
Okay.
And I actually started as an undergraduate as an ecology and evolution major. My first job in as an undergrad, I actually worked in an ecology lab. And as I continued in that role, I ended up doing more and more of the technical side. And I got very much interested in how computers and IT were supporting biology almost 20 years ago, and ended up changing my major to information science. And I still had a minor in biology. And then I became a student intern at the Pittsburgh Supercomputing Center. So as an intern, I had access to thousands of cores, which is still a big deal now, but was a really big deal back then.
Yeah, absolutely. And people don't give those out lightly.
No. And at the PSC, Pittsburgh Supercomputing Center, they had all kinds of diverse architectures and some cutting-edge machines. So it was a really incredible experience. And I got into protein structure prediction or homology modeling. So building hundreds of thousands or millions of protein models and then analyzing them to try to find the ones that were the most biologically relevant. So I continued in that field of study in grad school, studying the adenosine A1 receptor, which is actually very important in sleep regulation, and it's one of the receptors that caffeine binds to. So lots of studies around that and interest, just personally and scientifically, as
so
to how that works.
So is coffee good for you or bad for you? What's the decision?
It does a lot of things that people don't realize. I'll just – good things and bad things. So depending on how you look at it or what research studies you see. So it's just a very interesting molecule. And caffeine is actually a – natural pesticide. So plants generate it as a pesticide.
I did not know that. That's interesting. Sounds a little alarming too.
Yeah. And nicotine is a pesticide as well too. So my first job was actually in agricultural biotech, studying plant trait technology in the genomic space. And then I actually moved back to structural biology where I worked at Pfizer developing antibody drugs. And then from there, I went into molecular diagnostics, which was genomics, and then I was a research IT consultant for BioTeam. So lots of genomics, lots of structural biology, and the unifying theme there was lots and lots of data, lots and lots of analysis, and the data generation rates were only increasing, and the types of analysis was only getting more complicated. And because of my interest in that and the need, I ended up moving more and more towards that role. So now, part of the reason I joined Hammerspace is the software and hardware, the total infrastructure solution support of life sciences and the continuing growing data needs and growing data analysis management and sharing needs.
Awesome. So I didn't realize you came from BioTeam at one point. So we had Ari on our show, a few quarters ago, but you must know him as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, known very well. Doesn't live too far from where I do, too. So,
specific to life sciences, what are we offering at Hammerspace that you felt was really compelling?
I do think storage in general is the most important part of research pipelines, but an often forgotten or sort of secondhand thought when planning for your pipelines, your infrastructure, what you need to do to get your analysis done. And I have experience with a number of sort of traditional, well-known storage file systems and the pros and cons of each one. But the unifying theme of most of the products out there is they're basically just a place to put your data. When the user logs in, they don't necessarily know the difference of what vendor or product or technology they're using. The biggest problem I see, or I think, facing life sciences is how we get to manage, share, and analyze our data. The actual storage part is in many ways solved. With enough resources, you can make the place for your data as fast or as big as you want. The problem is that it doesn't stop there. That's just the beginning. So the ability to share, manage, analyze, that's the true challenge in life sciences, and Hammerspace uniquely is able to address that. And I was very excited about that and the successes they're having. The combination of what I'll just call metadata, the way you're understanding and managing your data, as well as the performance potential of Hammerspace, I think is unmatched and has huge potential for the types of challenges that I'm seeing and the types of problems that need to be solved.
Makes perfect sense. So I think on your first day here, there was an article sharing around about data silos and the challenges of data silos in life sciences. Let's delve into that topic. First, when you say data silos, what are we talking about? Are we talking about infrastructure silos, or like my data silos and I want to be the one who publishes it, or something in between? Let's kind of just ground there.
Sure. I think it is two parts, and they overlap sometimes. There's the actual infrastructure part of just as simple as imaging data at one site and then genomics data at a geographically different site within the same organization. And that can be a university, a government lab, obviously a pharma company. And that's sort of the physical problem. And then there's the cultural, political, policy problem of silos that can exist even within a single site, where the chemoinformatics department can't collaborate with the genomics department because of policies, because of technical limitations, because of, as you mentioned, cultural things that are in the organization preventing that from happening. So it's really a two-part problem. There's the physical part and then the enablement part, as I'll call it.
Makes sense. So let's talk about the physical and the infrastructure a bit. You have lots of experience with different file systems, storage technologies. Certainly my perspective is a lot of how those systems have been designed for decades was all around, you know, kind of the concept that the data that's created in them will stay in them. And that's how they know what's there, who's supposed to access it. You know, just it became kind of that where the data usage became very infrastructure bound and infrastructure defined. Would you agree with that? Like that, and that's part of what we want to overcome, is the infrastructure was created in doesn't necessarily own how it's used.
Yes, I definitely agree. And when this started, and I'll just say 10 or 15 years ago, and I think what really launched this was next generation sequencing, NGS, that really ramped up the data sizes in life sciences. It was more than had ever been seen before. At that time, it might have been more than any other industry was really generating. So it started there. And for years, it was really running as fast as you can to almost stay in the same place, just to catch up and manage what they were, what the scientists were generating. And the idea of being able to collaborate or to do cross data set analysis was not even thought of. So there wasn't even any planning for that. Now we've got exabytes of data all across the world, and no good way to interact with it, to share it, to move it. And we're so entrenched in that model that you mentioned of, let's just build something here to hold the data here and we're good, isn't working anymore.
So you mentioned metadata. Let's kind of just walk through how an organization might be able to solve this. Part of it is if you have exabytes of data scattered across locations, you need to know what is in it. How do you, in as a researcher or a, you know, something like Illumina Dragon or something like that, how do they know which data exists?
I don't think most people know what exists. it's a huge problem, and when I've done storage profiling for clients as a consultant, we could throw out all kinds of percentages and volumes, but lots and lots of data is kind of lost. It's there, but no one knows how to find it. They don't know what's old. They don't know what they can delete. They don't know what they may need to use for a current project or to reanalyze. People move around a lot in tech and life sciences. So even when people leave, you may not know where their data is or what they were working on. And there's so much untapped value in this lost data that's siloed across organizations.
So certainly the concept of unifying the metadata and putting that all in a shared global file system makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
So that you have a single source of truth, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Once you have that, there's the mobility of the data. You talked about, you know, the data management and data movement is important. Without kind of seeding my own thoughts there, why do you need to move data around? What is it that organizations would like to be able to do with it?
Well, you can't generate all data types at all locations. And collaborations happen between pharma and academia, or government and academia, or any mix of in between. So if you have a site with a number of microscopes generating data, but you need to share it and analyze it thousands of miles away, what are you supposed to do? You could put it on an external hard drive and ship it. That takes forever. That was very common. It is still fairly common, but it's becoming pretty much impossible now with the terabytes of data that can be generated per day per instrument. So being able to collaborate with your colleagues is a huge deal, and it's not easy to enable.
And beyond that, do you feel that availability of compute resources for processing, analytics, AI, whatever you might need the compute for, how does that play into this? Are most organizations able to put their compute local to the data, or are they trying to use an available cluster in the cloud? What is your experience on how the life sciences community is solving the compute needs?
Yeah, resource contention is a huge problem as well. I don't know of any customer I've ever talked to or client who said they had enough GPU or had enough compute. I was just talking to some Cryo-EM researchers a few weeks ago, and they had already maxed out all of their GPU nodes, and they could, if you gave them twice as many, they would be able to fill them up within a few days. So, and in the industry, there is somewhat of a GPU shortage as well. So having the flexibility of taking the data to the compute, and I'll use compute interchangeably with GPUs, is also would be hugely advantageous, and there aren't very good ways of doing that. And it is going to be, it's already a problem. It's going to become more of a problem.
And I know you're relatively new at Hammerspace, but with the knowledge you have so far, how do you see Hammerspace helping with these issues?
Certainly with cloud instances, both public and private clouds, being able to, lots of large pharma and certainly universities do have centralized compute resources. So being able to have your collaborators get their data to you would really enable much better collaboration, much better geographically diverse research. And as I mentioned before, there's not a good way to do that. And I do think Hammerspace is the platform that can actually enable that. And it's backed by the performance as well. It's not an out-of-plane script that you have to manually do everything and use rsync and file sharing software applications, and there's 10 different things and you're trying to move stuff back and forth and nobody knows what is where. I've heard all kinds of different percentages of time of researchers, how much they spend just wrangling their data. I'd say it's never less than 20%. So it, in reality, it's probably more than that. And when you're trying to aggregate different solutions with different infrastructure platforms, it really slows down the pace of research. And Hammerspace can remove those barriers.
Perfect. So we talked a bit about infrastructure. That's part of the problem. Culture, policy, other things are also affecting data sharing, data movement. Do you see that changing rapidly? Are there new standards on how to share data, which data? Kind of where is that from your perspective when you think about the research space, maybe not the patient care side?
Right. I think everybody talks about standards or what we can do to standardize things. I don't know that a true standard will ever be put into place. But what I think is finally driving researchers is the top-down AI push and the ability to, for things like personalized medicine, where you absolutely have to integrate different data types. So you can't get away with siloing your data anymore. I don't think researchers will be allowed to do that. So there has to be something put in place. And I don't mean like industry-wide, but within organizations to say, here's how we're going to share it. Here's how you have to manage your data. Here's the metadata tagging that has to happen. For organizations to survive, that is going to be a requirement. I mean, it already is a requirement, but the conversations are finally happening and researchers understand that they need to make a change.
Makes sense. So as we tie up, I want to talk a little bit about data architectures, relationships with data. As you think about a best practice or how in a consultative type of way you might be able to help customers who maybe designed their data and infrastructure 10 years ago and it is fairly siloed and now today they're trying to get to a more collaborative, maybe data in motion to humans or compute that they need to. How if they were to swing by, let's just say at BioIT, since you'll be there, how would you approach that conversation with them?
Well, there's sort of tactical versus strategic. And I think as a community, researchers will have to move past the tactical, even if it means some kinds of short-term delays as they plan for what they really want their platforms to be able to do and enable long-term. Long-term, I mean 2 to 5 years. But even beyond that, and beyond that is it's always tough to imagine, but I think it's important to know or to put it in context of however fast your infrastructure is, it's not going to be as fast as you'll need it to be in 24 months. However much capacity you have, it's not as much as you think you need, it'll be more than that in 24 months. So there's a planning for the burst need where traditional IT plans for the average, and planning for the average doesn't work anymore. So you think about how many sites you have, you think about the data generation rates, and just add to that, add 20%, or double the number of sites, double the number of GPU nodes you think you'll need. So it really comes down to planning for I don't want to say worst case, it's more the best case, planning for more researchers to use these resources and to need to collaborate than you ever thought would be possible before.
That makes sense. So designing for that flexibility, you said, designing to be able to accommodate the burst and workload is a big part of it. And that makes perfect sense. So Adam, I know you'll be heading off to BioIT World. Where is the best place for people to find you there? And how can they get in contact with you if they want to schedule some time one-to-one?
Sure. I'll be at the Hammerspace booth. I will also be speaking on Tuesday at 1:15. And I can always be reached by email at adam.marco@hammerspace.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. Any of those is fine. So,
and what will your talk on Tuesday be about?
It will also be about consolidating data silos and the challenges that researchers are facing with their relationship with data.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us. And we hope to have you back on maybe in a few quarters.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to Data Unchained, powered by Hammerspace. To learn more, visit hammerspace.com. If you have a guest you would like to hear on the show, email me at molly@hammerspace.com.